that has big time camp. What the movie will be the ultimate champ. You might be finger crazy, my finger diseased, but do you watch another chance to find the best of this?
We rate each movie in 5 categories, none of which are objective quality.
It's Stan, Gene, Jack and Nick who watch it till it's finished, because the love for this movie can be diminished. And make the film's plot has no rhyme or reason, but that's a part of charm.
Colin Brad is off the season.
It's low budget film that is most true. They find a flick that monster boogaloo.
Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Are you ready to mustache? Welcome back, my friends, to another episode of the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This is season 7. Free mustache rides. I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu, and I am so happy to be with you today to talk about the Italian movie Street Law. And I am joined by my good friends. I got Nick Boxer in the house.
We'll get you that garage, Johnny. We'll get you that garage, Stan, I mean. Stan, we'll get you that garage.
What?
Oh man, okay.
It'll all make sense at the end, don't worry.
You betcha.
You did watch the movie, right?
Yes. But we're giving it away, man. We don't want to give it away yet. All right.
Give it away.
Jim.
Hey, Nick in that garage. We're going to have a beautiful waiting room and a place for snacks.
More cars than you can fit.
Over there will be the race cars.
Jack, help us out with this garage. Keep helping us build this garage picture.
I had nothing at all. Let's move on to the movie. Nick, good luck. Explain this thing.
You know what? I don't need luck with this one. Really? This is Death Wish without the rapey bits.
And far more gun control.
Did one of the thugs in this go on to be Jeff Goldblum? The Italian version of Jeff Goldblum.
Death Wish hadn't hit Italy by this point, but I think it's safe to assume that the director had seen it. our star, Franco Nero, our big mustache, he gets roughed up in a bank robbery, and he gets a little frustrated with the police not doing anything. So he decides to hunt down the criminals on his own. What ensues is a bloody massacre and
really?
Basically violent fun.
I guess I didn't watch the same movie as you guys, or as Nick at all. Then there's really not much massacring until, like, the last 10 minutes.
Yeah, that last 10 minutes is spectacular, though. And car chases galore, and they're all done well. I love the car chases in this movie. Shitty cars, though. But the car chases were awesome.
Apparently that's not what you need to have a good car chase. It's a good car.
Cars are overrated in the car chases.
Good mess of me. Jim, what do you think of this sucker?
I don't know where to start. Obviously the comparisons to Death Wish are both obvious and straightforward. Because Death Wish is based on a book, right? So
yeah.
So this, like, it probably same source. It's not, I mean, it's also not that crazy. I guess we'll get to how crazy a concept. I don't want to telegraph that. I think what was really interesting to me was, because it's Italian, the amount of the plot that goes into him getting guns, it's like half the film. is him trying to figure out how to get a pile of guns. Where in Death Wish, it's like he goes to the Sev. He like stops by the Circle K, and it's just nothing but guns. And like that's really not a plot. Like in an American film, where did he get the guns isn't a question you ever ask. But when you're watching an Italian version of the same, half the film has to go into where he's going to get these guns from.
I found it refreshing, actually.
Yeah, I guess the thing that I found about this movie, and I think it's totally fair when you talk about that, is that there is a lot of effort put into this movie to try to show that how a regular guy would both react and go about doing this. Because there's no, like, at no point would you ever call him a badass or like a super overly heroic vigilante. Here's a guy who, I mean, he barely knows how to use a gun, quite frankly. I mean,
He just gets his ass kicked over and over,
over and over again. Yeah. And
he
by the
not
time,
a badass. Like that's no, the thing. No. This is Django, and much like Charles Bronson, he's not a badass really at the beginning, but his evolution to a badass is pretty quick. But you buy it because he's Charles Bronson, right?
Well, sure.
So it's the same thing. Like you think Franco Nero badass, and then he's not, and he never really even at the end in the shootout. I don't think he ever becomes really a badass.
I think the only time that he really gets the better of someone he's fighting is Barbara Bach.
Nice. Well, she didn't fight back.
I wrote down here, big hero.
I know. Like, he's a dick.
Well, it's all this pressure that he put on himself. Like, make no doubt, I wasn't particularly engaged during the movie. I wandered off a couple of times in and out with it. because again, it's an Italian movie, so therefore it has different pacing than an American movie, which I am more used to.
Yeah, that's true.
And so it's long.
How long was it? Was it that long? I didn't think it was that long.
Buck 41.
Yeah. Okay, that's really, long.
See, I was riveted for the entire movie. It was the little weird things that I particularly loved. I mean, the blocking in the final shootout scene is spectacular. As I said, I mean, even when they're just two guys driving in a car, they're traveling at real speeds, unlike American productions, and it made everything feel a little off and a little scary. I was in for this entire movie. At no point did I want to go have a nap like Isle of the Dead.
Isle of the Snake People.
Whatever. Yeah, it scored a 2 on the forgettability scale. So
I think Isle of the Dead, though, is likely coming up some season.
I think there might be a whole season.
How can anybody not be riveted? How can anybody walk away after the opening of this movie? Like, that could be the greatest opening credit sequence in history.
The lawless realm of Italy?
Yeah, like, Italy's just, it's just crime and nobody's doing nothing.
It's violent.
It's over the top, but awesome.
It's awesome. It is over the top. And it is something that the director filmed, like, got agreement from the crew and the stunt people to do and not pay them for because the producer wouldn't give him the money to shoot it, even though he had the idea. But everybody thought it was such a good idea that they all just shot it. And, you know, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff. Opening couple of minutes is like a Peckinpah movie.
Oh, totally. Yes.
First couple of minutes, it's just so brutal. And it's
I thought it was Straw Dogs for a moment. Yeah,
but to bookend this movie with like such incredible violence, and then I like that idea that there's a lot of mundane parts where he's not stalking his prey, and he's not his big plan ends up being to fake his own kidnapping to guilt the police into doing something.
But it's the thing about that big plan is that it's, and this is something that I do appreciate, and I appreciate this movie. Like I don't think it's Boogaloo in the least. And I when I look at this movie and
oh,
the big
I
plan
didn't agree there.
Okay. I mean when I look at the big plan, to me, I come up and say, like, okay, well, that wasn't his big plan at the beginning, but it morphed as like, all this shit happened to him that like, oh, wow, he suddenly came up with this plan, and it works, and there's... And so, you know, I like the evolution of his character.
Well, and the police are just so incompetent through the whole thing, because he's involved in a robbery, and his manhood has been threatened, his machismo, and the police say, well, you know, what can you do? You can't find him in the photos of all the criminals, so there's nothing we can do. So he tracks down the guys, says, here's where they are, here's who did it. And they're like, yeah, like, we're never going to be able to find those guys. we're not going to be able to make it stick. And then he's like, I don't know. Like, I keep trying things, and like, whatever you tell me is your excuse, I go fix that, and we're back at it. The cops are just awful in this movie.
Oh yeah. So, I mean, cause the opening, it was a post office. At first I thought it was a bank, cause that's what would make sense.
It sure looked like a bank. Yeah.
But it was a post office being robbed, because that's where really you would go for the most money.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess maybe money orders. Like, is it money orders that's worth getting at a post office? Like back.
This would be
payroll days. Like it'd be when you'd actually have to move. Like, were there sacks of money with dollar signs on the side?
and Carlos, the Franco Miro, I think it was Carlos or Carlo.
Carlo,
I think. Yeah, Carlo. Like, he showed up with all this money. What was his? Was it for a transfer? Or
to, like, I actually don't know. I thought he was gambling. I thought he was going to his bookie.
I think it was a wire transfer. I think that's what it was for. I think this place is like a MoneyGram kind of place.
So when the you talk about the
he was buying.
You talk about the incompetence of the police. So it is a post office where there is a money. And I think there was a guard at this place, if I remember correctly. But anyways, these guys come in and rob it. So they can't make it stick because they had on masks. Like, is that what it was? Because you couldn't figure out who they were.
Yeah,
they had masks on.
They
did have masks on, because there must have been, like, cameras, right? Because all I know is that the first thing they do when they get in the car, they hear they have a guy who – okay, so let me explain this scene. Not Boogaloo in the least. Let me explain this scene. So he brings this money in for a money transfer. Then these guys come in and rob everybody. They're threatening everybody, you know, with their guns. Everybody gets down. He sees his money. He decides he doesn't want them to hand it, so he kind of slowly reaches for it. They see him. They hit him with the butt, because he's about to grab the money with the butt of their gun, and they start kicking him. And then the police show up. And all of this, by the way, takes about 10 seconds. Then the police show up. So they grab him and they use him to, like, as a hostage to escape without the police or run away or whatever. They use him as a hostage because they're blaming him for everything. Like, you had to get involved, like, for trying to grab your money and taking that 10 seconds out of our life. That changed everything. So the first thing they do is they get him in the car and they look at him. And now these guys that are trying to be these criminals, trying to get away from the police who are chasing them. First thing they do is to look at this witness they have that they're not going to kill, and decide, fuck, I got to take this mask off so he can see what I look like. So they all four of them just rip their masks off so he can see what they look like. I at this point, I'm already boogalooing it up. Like, nobody else. Like, and am I wrong here? Jim, Nick, what? Give me your point of view here.
I think you're wrong, because those balaclavas they were wearing were the European style that didn't hide any of the face.
That's a good point, too.
You know, one guy had his nose out. if concealing their identity, that was not. I just figured it was cold out, and they were all have to wear the same hats that day. No, I think the masks actually were just for the cameras. Obviously, these criminals. I mean, they make a big deal of these are professional criminals. They know what they're doing. They know the cops don't give a damn. So I think that's just a commentary on what the cops actually think of law enforcement.
Okay, so I'm trying to figure out, because I don't quite get this. So did the cops, were they incompetent? Did they not care? Or were they like in somebody's pocket? Like, which one of those?
All three.
All three. Okay, good. All right. I wasn't sure.
I I'm gonna go with all three. They do seem to be quite apathetical. Apathetic about the whole thing. couple of words mixed together there. They're quite apathetic about the whole thing, and they do just come up with excuses all the time of like, you know, we'd love to stop the crime, but I don't know. I've got all these papers to handle, and you know,
but we've seen these kind of things before, though, in these movies where it's like,
for sure.
Well, you can't go after them because we need hard evidence. You're only giving us circumstantial evidence. We need hard evidence.
They do say, "Give me time. We'll get to it. We'll get them. Don't worry. Just give us some time."
Yeah.
Like, you know. A lot of time, apparently.
Well, yeah, but it's also obvious that in this case they're you know, pushing the cops further to make everything work. I mean, like, this to me, when I watch this movie, like, this is one of those occasions where they've created a world. It's not necessarily, it's like a hyper version of our own world, and everything is just a little bit exaggerated on all sides. And so once you've established that world, then I actually find that things move from point A to point B quite normally in the way that I would have expected.
If you want to put that caveat on the movie, then you can put that on every fucking movie we've ever watched.
Nick does frequently. Nick frequently does use that.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say that on the recommendation of a couple of the co-hosts here, I watched Class of 1984, the first one that of like the movie that comes before Class of 1984.
What was the mustache? Class of 1984. If you watched it, there must have been a mustache. Otherwise, why bother?
Barry King.
Right. Barry King's mustache.
Barry King, a voice of Han Solo from the Star Wars radio play.
Don't tell us stuff we all already know.
So that in that movie. Perry King's being harassed by bad guys, and the cops can't. Al Waxman's the cop, and Al Waxman can't do anything about it. He's like,
right.
"You're already against theirs. No witnesses." And so I watch Class of 1984, and then I watch Street Law, where the cops are like, "I don't know what you want from us. Like, there's not enough witnesses. We can't find these guys. We don't know their name, which is apparently the only thing that we can go on." and it made me want to move to the mountains and just like. Defend for myself.
Number one, I'd like to say that you're saying is it Perry King is a Class of 1984?
Perry King.
And is Al Waxman, so you're saying there's two kings in there.
That's right.
All right. Nice. If you're Canadian, you might get that.
Three hours of the cops not helping you when you get in trouble. That's what I have all night.
there's no question about it. And I'm sure that I looked at that, like, had that in my head when I watched this movie. Because there's like, the cops are absolutely a train wreck.
But when he gets kidnapped and they finally do have to, like, go and stop the criminals, they're pretty good at it. Like, when the cops decide that they actually need to harass them and find them, they just go and harass them and find them. Everybody except for these thugs who did the beginning. They're the only criminals who look like they get away. But there's the one scene where the one criminal shows up to some other criminal who's, like, I guess, like a boss criminal, like mafia head or something like that, looking for protection. And he won't give him any. And I'm going, he never showed up before. You don't tell us who he is. So I'm guessing he's a mob important person. Like, there was a lot of that stuff going on. One of the other things about these thugs, these guys are thugs, and like they're performing really, really, really pretty basic crimes. But goddamn, everybody in this movie is really well dressed. I mean, everybody is.
It is
really
Italy. It's where the suits come from.
Yeah. Well, not just suits, but just fashion, man. Fashion.
Nice.
Yeah, the one thing I thought was sort of lost in translation well, there were probably a couple, but I think the four guys were connected and to a larger criminal syndicate, And just because they kept mentioning, like, the underground, they kept calling underground crime and like that. I there was a larger organization at work, which I think played into the cops not wanting to do anything as well.
Okay, that would make sense. I mean, again, I don't know. I mean, I think you're just writing it yourself at this point, but it does make sense.
Well, yeah, I could be writing a little bit of there.
So let's talk about Carlo's best friend, Tommy. This character, the evolution of this character, because it's referenced at the beginning. Jim, you're laughing. Please explain this whole thing.
So he corners. I can't remember how he meets Tommy. Tommy's a criminal, and he takes photos of him.
That's because he starts going after criminals, like and I thought for a moment that it was the same three guys, but it wasn't, and so then there was that moment of like, why is he going after these criminals? But I mean, his master plan obviously was just find a criminal, take pictures of them doing criminal things, and then blackmail them to find the right criminals. I mean, it's a plan.
And to get guns.
To get guns.
Yeah, that's get guns, yes. Well, it's vague on whether like he's trying to get them to get guns so the police can catch them with guns, or he wants the guns himself. I was never entirely clear on that.
I'm not completely sure that he was either.
Yeah, maybe he was just, you know, he's doing the Yojimbo thing. It's both sides against the middle.
I really like for me, like, I just felt like he was a guy who didn't really know what he was doing at any given moment because he was so out of his element.
Anyways, and we can get into that a little later, but
so he blackmails Tommy into helping him. Tommy he's the criminal with a heart of gold. He doesn't want our hero. He doesn't want Franco Nero to get killed. So, he helps him escape at one point. And Tommy likes working on cars. He used to work. He's a school dropout. He's been in and out of reform school, but he's always liked working on cars. So Franco Nero, pal that he is, promises that once this is all over, they're gonna have a garage together.
Yeah, yeah. Because later on, like he. What's his name? Tommy. I mean, he does turn him over to the other guys, to the bad guys at one point, but he also saves him. Like, he feels bad for it. And so, and this friendship, this odd friendship starts to form. And it's strange because Tommy, like I say, they go out of their way to make sure, you know, Tommy's not a bad guy because he's a bad guy. He's a bad guy because he grew up in a place where he had no chance. Where he grew up poor. He did what he had to survive. That's why he ended up and because of that, he ended up in crimes early and everything like that. And meanwhile, all I can say is, man, he's fashionably dressed, really expensive stuff. Nice.
This is Rome. Everybody, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. That's just the way it is. But yeah, no. So, yeah, I mean, because he's a much more likable character than Carlo. Like,
yep.
He is, like, slap her up Barbara Bach, so, you know, points are right at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. What was it she said that made him so mad? Something like, you can't just go and kill them. And he was so frustrated, he just turned around and slapped her, because he kept on saying he wanted to kill the criminals. And then his next move after he says he wants to kill the criminals is to just show up at a bar where there's a bunch of criminals looking for them and say, hey, do you know where these guys are? Like, no plan. And they all look at him and like, who are you? And we're going to beat the hell out of you. And so he just runs away. I'm like, this is... Anyway.
Oh, I love it.
Want to get to scoring?
I'm good to go on to scoring. Did we capture everything in the plot?
Yeah.
All right. In our search for the ultimate B movie, we rate every film in five categories, none of which are objective quality. The first category is called Schlock Appeal, and we start with Stan.
Well, this is a movie, and it's from the 1970s. It seems like a 70s actioner with some death wish in it, and that's about what I got from it. So it's a two.
Wow, I'm gonna go a little higher on that, because I mean, they're trying to capitalize on spaghetti westerns. The police film Italian thing hadn't quite been done yet. They did Franco Nealer's steely blue eyes are all over that poster. I'm going to go with a 5.
Yeah, it's a genre of film that became popular in Italy in the late 60s through the late 70s. And I'm going to mispronounce it, but it's called Poliziotteschi, and which is essentially it's spaghetti crime films is what they're known as. And this is a spaghetti crime film. Make no doubt about it. So it's kind of like I found it very schlocky, but it is partially like, is that because of the things in translation and the voiceover work? Or is that because once again, the only guy with an actual Italian accent is Franco Nero.
Yes.
But I thought it was pretty schlocky, so I got a 7.
So the film is dubbed. Did you notice that it was dubbed?
Yeah.
Well, I know what Franco Nero sounds like.
That period are dubbed.
What was that, Stan?
I know what Franco Nero sounds like. And let me tell you, he wasn't dubbed.
That's just funny to Stan and I.
I don't know what the hell you guys are talking about.
Oh my god.
I know you don't. I just
oh wait. Oh.
I just went with a 4 on this. Oh, okay. I just went with it.
Lose reference. Great.
A 4 is what I went with on this. I think there's some schlock in it, and I'm saving up a couple of things for the WTFs. But it does get into that dangerous ground of being, for want of a better term, good.
Yeah.
At several points,
there's a stretch where I'm like really into it. Going, this is a good movie, and then I start. Yeah, I'm like, it's almost ruining my enjoyment.
Yeah, the Boogaloo lens is harsh on movies. There.
Oh, you know it. You know
just
it.
Just well made. 4 for me, Stan. More heart than budget.
Well, do we know what the budget was?
No.
In this case?
No. I, you know what? Let me look it up real quick. But
lost to the annals of time.
Yeah, it might be difficult to give it.
It's interesting.
I know it's box office. It earned 1.73, it says billion, whatever. Whatever,
lira is that
lira or whatever, which it was a financial success at that. So his budget, I'm guessing, was less than that.
That could be $12 US. I have no idea, but
did not have enough money to shoot that opening sequence. Put it that way.
No, that's right. In all fairness, like in this case, I actually think that they worked their asses off in this movie. Like this is the. You know, they put out what they wanted. The fact that like you say, that they shot the opening scene without the producers knowing, without pay and stuff like that. I think that really speaks to what they actually wanted to try to get out on celluloid for this. So for me, I'm going to go with an 8.
Yeah, definitely a strong 8 on this one because, I mean, with this kind of budget, with this kind of film, an international cast, you don't get a film this good without somebody giving a damn. So yeah, 8. I love this movie.
Yeah, they didn't phone anything in. That's for damn sure. They absolutely Franco Nero did his best to create a compelling character and a layered character. And in general, I think they tried to create compelling layered characters, except for the criminals. But for the most part. But nevertheless, I can't go quite as high as you guys. So I got a 7.
Oh, come on. Give him one more for the suits.
Yeah, they spent a lot of money on clothes.
I'll be honest. I expect that all those people, that was their own clothes.
Yeah, that's right.
I think the production quality is quite good for what was probably like a throwaway drive-in style movie at the time or whatever was in right then in Italy. Grindhouse, what was in. So I think they definitely put it on the screen. I like the not only what you told me there, Jack, about the about the crew was working for free. I love that in that opening bit, every crime was like commit the crime, make it violent, and then there's a getaway car.
Yeah,
definitely a driving culture. And no one ran away from the scene in any of those.
No bicycles either.
No scooters. Yeah, no Vespas.
One guy was almost dragged away. Did you catch that? The one guy.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
the car as he
died. Yeah, who clearly didn't say like he wasn't. They weren't waiting for him to go, okay, I'm in, before they hit the gas. I went up to a 9 on this one. There's a lot of heart for $8 on the screen, or 80 million lira, whichever. What the fuck moments?
I don't have a lot in this category myself. Like, the only two things that I really noted are, I do think the relationship between Carlo and Tommy, especially by the end, like, there's a point where you're almost like, are these guys going to kiss? Because it just kind of was grooving over there for a second. But so just the fact that happened so quickly. I mean, I understand movie time constraints and all that, but the second time that he's caught by the three criminals and like they have him near the junkyard or whatever, and they're beating on him again, but their big system for wanting to dissuade him is to just, one of them grabs him and drags him through a whole bunch of puddles. And I was really wondering, like, is this your best, the best that you've got? You're just dragging him through puddles. How is that even really hurting him? But it wasn't a whole lot overall. I'm just going to go with the 3.
I'm going with a 2, and that's just for the god-awful soundtrack.
Oh,
at
boy.
No,
oh,
at no point soundtrack. Did I feel the music was appropriate to what was going
never
on.
Never was. That's what made it great. I have never heard a movie where the music so badly synced up with what was happening on the screen as far as mood.
And like, it was the same, like, if I think they just got one song made, and that was the song that they just played over and over
again. And it
didn't
fit the mood of the film at all. Fantastic, but boy was it ever 70s disco.
Oh
yeah, but that's all I got for WTF, so I, yeah, on our WTF scale, it's not a high one.
I already gave a whole bunch, so you know, I think it's got some significant WTFs. I'm just gonna say at the end where that shootout happens, I think that's in an airplane. I don't even know how they got there. They just went into this big building and it was empty. I'm like, is it an airplane hangar? They didn't seem to be near airplanes. Like, it's just huge. But you already talked about it. So I'm going to do the dialogue for you guys here. Here is the quote for the end, the very end of this movie. Tommy felt unconscious and almost bled to death after being shocked by the group of muggers. Ha, we made it. We got rid of them. Carlo, ha, you bet your ass. Tommy. Unconscious. Tommy, aside from the bulldozer. The garage. I deserve my own payment, huh? Carlo, you sure do. We're going to open the biggest garage of all time. You'll be famous. Big Tommy, a real personality. And all the girls will come to your garage just to see Big Tommy. Tommy, straining. Jesus, what a big garage you found. Carlos, yeah. Tommy, it's the biggest place I've ever seen. Carlos, in tears. And we'll fill it with cars. There'll be so many, we won't have room to work. Over there, we'll put the race cars. The bodyworks will go over there. And the motors, you can fix in that corner. And we'll pipe in music. There will be a beautiful waiting room. And Tommy dies. And we'll have a place for snacks. What do you think, partner? God!
And we'll have a place for snacks. Seven. I was checking something. I missed both Stan and Nick's numbers. Stan, what was yours again?
It's like a 2 and a 3, wasn't it?
I gave it a 3, and gave it a 2.
I gave it a 2, yeah.
I am all caught up now. All right. Whew, Octagon disaster there. Okay, so I want to go macro here with the plot of this film. The plot of this film is, okay, so the robbery happens in the post office. Franco Nero gets grabbed by the robbers, and then he complains to the cops about catching the three robbers. They don't have a mugshot of him. It takes Franco Nero the just the early part of an afternoon to look through newspapers and find three news stories that have the same photos of these criminals. And he's like, well, there they are. That's this, like, here's a bunch of pictures of them. He doesn't take that back to the police.
No, of course not. That would be lost.
To start looking around town to try to find them.
Well, he's already proven that, we've already proven that the police are incompetent, so why bother bringing the pictures to them? They know who they look
now
like.
Now he has with this thing that they seem to be complaining they didn't have evidence, and now he's got that.
Well, and the police say that we haven't a clue as to their identities. And he's, well, I don't know. I've got... The newspaper has front on photos of them. Like these are mugshot style photos. They're just a straight on photo of the guy. This is not like a surveillance photo or anything.
No, these are not
straight on facial photos of the guys.
These are not hard men to find. I'm sorry.
But we also learned later that that you know there might be a mole in the police office. So
he goes out to find these three criminals with his newspaper reference material of what the three guys look like. And then, you know, finally we have the big shootout with the three criminals at the end of the movie. Now, the reason I'm going with a five for the WTFs is there are four criminals. Three guys are in the bank and a guy drives the car. He never once tries to find the guy who drove the car.
That guy was just a guy. He was just the driver. He was the getaway driver. He
was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Like
just paid to play. That's all. Like just you know, you get your $20 for driving the car, and you're out. That's it.
He's already off on other errands. Like it's just like a 1974 Uber. That's all that
they,
guy.
They made a movie about him. It's Baby Driver.
Nice. Yeah. This is Baby Driver. This is Granddaddy Driver.
Yeah, there you go.
Hell, I spent most of the movie thinking that fourth guy was Tommy. So,
well, yeah, I know. It took me a little while to figure
actually
that
thought
out,
it was Tommy there for a bit too. Yeah. memorable moments, Stan.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. For normally, I would say for a good movie that I might come up with more memorable moments. And again, it's like I mostly enjoyed the movie. I like the way the story was told, but you know, I did find it a little slow. And overall, I just don't know that I'm going to think too much out of this in a couple of years, other than, yeah, I remember Franco Nero in a Death Wish style story. So yeah, it's tough. I'm only going to go with a 2.
Wow. 8 for me. I love this movie. The blocking on some of the scenes was so spectacular. The car chases were exciting, better than a lot of American movies you see. That final shootout. I mean, you have a guy shooting from a earth mover of some sort and falling into a fish tank. That was cool.
Yeah, but I don't know where the fish tank came from, but damn, yeah.
No, it came out of nowhere. It made no sense whatsoever, but it was cool, well, so I was...
Certainly
was,
don't count it in your WTFs, then.
You know what? I didn't think about it until I was talking about it now, so it doesn't count as a WTF.
It made sense within the context of the rest of the story.
Yeah, and I mean, they were carrying cool guns. Eight for memorable. This is definitely going to go into my next rotation of Death Wish style films.
Oh my god, that's my favorite thing in the entire show now. My next rotation of Death
occasionally
Wish
I like to have a little Death Wish marathon.
And that's not something he's making up for the show.
No. But I love the fact that it's
Death Wish 3. We know that sentence.
It's just so specific. Death Wish style movies. Awesome. So great.
So I just thought of a good WTF. How about there in that shootout, like the beginning, like Franco Nero's sitting there and Tommy's, you know, off to the side, and he doesn't know where, if he's like supposed to run and save Tommy or if he's supposed to like run for cover. So he just sits there in the middle going back and forth, not taking cover for like 30 seconds, and nobody bothers to shoot him. He's just like, hey, and it's like right in the middle of this huge... Oh, man. And meanwhile, and then one of the criminals is behind the wall, and he's like talking to him, and I'm just looking at him going, you have a straight sight line to just shoot him right now. Oh, man. Anyways, but memorable moments. I don't know, the opening scene would definitely stick with me. Overall, like, I don't think it has like as memorable moments go. I wouldn't put it like where there's any specific scene where I'm like, that's iconic. But it's an overall movie that I'll remember for its uniqueness and quality. It's pretty good. So I got a 6.
Yeah, I think I think one of the challenges with a movie like this is that it's pretty well made. Like, it's as well made as any, as like, it's better made than all but one Death Wish. So I think I'll remember this one as I haven't seen a lot of Franco Nero. So this will be my Franco Nero memory. I'm giving it a 6 as well. All right.
And next Creed. Time you do Death Wish style up marathon, will it be in?
Well, I unfortunately just did a Death Wish style marathon. It was it included all the Death Wish movies. That's what I put in it. Yeah, that was
a low hanging fruit there, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, it didn't bring a lot of imagination, but I did bring a lot of shooting. all right, crazy concept.
It's a Death Wish style movie. 2.
Yeah, I can't give it a lot of points for originality. I mean, true, at this point, I don't think they were making these movies in Italy, but they definitely were over here. So, yeah, 3.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I say, if you take the era and you take the place and time and the geography, it's a little more, but it's still not exactly high concept. So I got a 4. Give it a 5, Jim. Please give it a 5.
4 is what's in the octagon. Okay. Last chance, last orders for changing anything. All right. So every season we have 6 secret modifiers. This movie has one of them. It is more than 95 minutes, so it gets a -1 for that. Which brings it to a incredibly average 50 out of 100.
Wow.
Tying with King of the Kickboxers.
Oh, there you go.
See, to me, like, King of the Kickboxers is so much more Boogaloo than Street Law.
Would strangely make an awesome double feature.
Yeah, it would make a fantastic double feature. And here's the thing, King of the Kickboxers might be more Boogaloo, but it's not a better quality movie.
No, it so most definitely
is
not.
I think both of them being a 50 is actually, I think that fits. I'm like, yeah, I could see these two.
Yeah.
Yeah. As usual, I have no objection to our actual scoring.
I've been unclear on the appeal process if we do have we have to go to the I think we have to assemble at least 3 of the Saints of Boogaloo if we want to alter the scores.
Yes, we definitely need to revisit and so write your request in triplicate, submit it to the Saints of Boogaloo, and once they respond with a yay or nay, then we can move forward. And speaking of moving forward, next time we're going to talk about Ramblin' Man, which already sounds good, and our free mustache ride of that one is Tom Selleck, I do believe. So that should be nothing but quality right there.
Because a little Tom bit Selleck, of Jerry Reed soundtrack in there too.
Oh yeah, I do love me some Jerry Reed soundtrack.
And that means that there are only 2 movies away from announcing what we're doing next season.
That is true.
I know everybody's going to start getting excited by, because you guys have already picked a lot of your movies, haven't you?
I'm ready to go. We could do it now.
I could not do it now. I was waiting for the last episode like we fucking agreed to.
All right, Jim.
Wait. It's like opening the Christmas presents on Christmas Eve. It's
that's right.
It's right.
Jim, tell the folks where to find us.
We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and You should also go to WeTalkPodcasts.com. They are our podcast sponsor, and that is the home of the Octagon, the running track of all of the films that we have looked at in our search for the Ultimate B-Movie, sortable by category and by final total, as well as a link to each of the individual episodes. We are on YouTube and iTunes with this show, so subscribe, like, comment. It's been fascinating. Some shows... people on YouTube are definitely seeking out individual episodes, film episodes, rather than subscribing, because the numbers are all over the place. But subscribe, do review. Reviews are super helpful to us.
Yeah, and do subscribe on iTunes while it still exists.
There you go. That's right.
Yeah, well, in your podcast app, how about that? Your podcast app. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, We Talk Podcasts on Facebook and on Twitter.
And of course, you can watch Street Law on Tubi TV, and we have been enjoying the Tubi for a lot more than just the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo movies. That's for sure.
That's absolutely. And when we said that, tweeted out to Tubi, we're watching all the movies this season on Tubi. Liked that tweet when we said we love Tubi. Tubi appreciates our love. Nice. And everybody should appreciate Tubi.
Well, we certainly do, and we appreciate the mustaches that have provided us with this glorious season. So, next episode, Ramblin' Man, this episode was Street Law. So for Jim and for Jack... and for Nick, I am your host, 8th Dan Stanadu. Thanks for listening to the Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo.
Don't anybody move. This is a holdup.
Anybody move, they get hurt.
Hold it.
I said don't move. You're not going to pull any trigger. Shut up. I'll kill you. I'll kill you. I said I'll kill you. Stuffer.
Stop there, kid.
No.
You're not going anywhere.
No. Let's go. Get a move on.
You're coming with us!
There are dozens of robberies a day. We can't put a policeman on every corner. Criminals like that shoot to kill. We should never provoke them.
I was frightened and humiliated. You have no idea how frightened I was. I know they were armed, but it was more than that. It's a question of self-respect. I'll kill them if I find them.
You gone crazy? You think it's that easy to make a contact in the underworld? They can smell you a mile away.
That gang generally hits three banks in a row. While the police race to the first bank, they're already robbing the second one. Then they hit the third.
What do you need?
Two sort of shotguns, a Tommy gun.
Is it for you?
No.
Who wants it?
Well, they want to stay undercover. They come from out of town.
Even tellers are instructed not to resist in cases of armed robbery. You were not very wise to defy them.
Wise? I didn't defy anybody. I was just trying to get my money. I sweat for it, understand?
Don't you realize the damage you can do yourself? You can't just take the law into your own hands.
I'm tired of trusting people with my life who don't give a damn. Tired of taking it on the chin. Tired of being a docile, good citizen.
What?
The warning must have come from in here.
Watch what you say.
You know where the contacts and receivers are, where the gun dealers are, and all you have to do is throw them in jail. But you treat them like buddies, because when there's trouble, they are the ones who give the information you need.
That's enough.
I got you the stuff, right? You wanted three men, I put you in touch with them. Now, what else do you want?
The names and addresses of those three you found.
You love me, but you're doing everything to get yourself killed. What do you want from me, Carl?
Finally found us. Bastard!
Take my advice. Forget about those guys. Don't go through with it.
What's the matter with you? When something goes wrong, you think you can become a posse of one and go after the bad guys with guns?
Criminals like that shoot to kill. You should never provoke them.
Well, are you coming out? Okay, you asked for it.
Just look at him. What kind of a man are you, huh? A good, honest citizen. Hey, you're no better than a common criminal. Maybe worse.